I'll introduce Alex Colley. I think Alex wins the award for the longest title on the program this year, so well done. Alex is no stranger to these seminars. He's presented at a number of papers at these seminars. Alex is a Chief Research Officer with the Institute for Safety, Compensation and Recovery Research, or ISCO. I thought I'd give you a little bit of background on ISCO first. ISCO's mission is to conduct and translate high-quality research that will improve the health and safety and rehabilitation outcomes of Victorian workers and transport accident victims. The Institute has a major focus on research translation and seeks to bridge the gap between evidence production and evidence use in public policy environments, with a particular focus on Australian injury prevention and compensation settings. Alex has published very, very widely, over 80 publications. He is trained in psychology and has held senior positions both in industry and the government sector. So we welcome Alex Colley.
Thank you. A small but elite group here today to talk about case management. No need to introduce myself anymore, thanks very much. Just by way of a little bit more background, I've been working in research in this field for about 9 or 10 years now. And I guess over that period of time I've come to the position that of all the things that occur in personal injury compensation schemes, the one thing that we have power to control that can improve people's recovery and rehabilitation is this. It's how we do claims management. And I'm going to explain why I think that's the case as I go through and just describe some results from a study that we're running at ISCA about the experience of case managers working in these systems. And I'm using case management as a sort of a collective term to describe claims management, injury management, adjudication, all the various names that we give the same thing, really, the role of people who work with those people that are injured in a sort of face-to-face way. The study I'm going to talk about is an Australian Research Council, what's called an Australian Research Council Industry Linkage Grant, which I'm leading. It has a pretty substantial group of investigators from Monash and the University of Melbourne, Professors Kelleher, Peterson, McClure, Nikki Ellis, and Dr. Sharon Newnham, and Dr. Vogel from the University of Melbourne, and supported also by three compensation schemes around the country and some representation from those schemes on our project management committee. So I want to ask a question, really, which is do people here think case management is just something that we do in this sector, or do we think of it as an intervention in the recovery process? And if you step back from working within personal injury compensation schemes and think about the recovery after injury from the injured person's perspective, the claims management and the interaction with the case management is one part of your recovery, and it occurs sometimes after you're injured, and it probably stops, hopefully, sometime before you're fully recovered. And it's probably the major intervention in your recovery process if you're involved in a workers' comp scheme or a transport accident compensation scheme, because not only all of a sudden do you have to start dealing with this compensation scheme, but the person that you're dealing with has a fairly significant influence over your healthcare and other sort of services that are provided to you. So if we think about it as an intervention in the recovery process, then we have to ask ourselves the question, how effective are we at intervening in recovery via case management, I think. And here's an example of a study of case management as an intervention from the Swedish Social Accident Insurance System, published about 10 years ago, conducted at the sort of turn of the century, and they describe it as an integrated injury case management intervention. So it was case management plus, if you like. It was an attempt to get all of the players in the recovery and rehabilitation process on the one page. So the case manager, the workplace supervisor, the OT, physicians and the injured worker had multiple components to it, including a visit by all of those people to the workplace and a visit to the insurance office. So I'd ask you, how many times have you had injured workers coming in to your insurance office? And the intervention was sort of a multifaceted intervention. So it was sort of case management on steroids, if you like. But it was very effective. So this intervention in this group of clients with musculoskeletal conditions led to a reduction in time away from work of 50 days over the first 12 months and a reduction in the costs of those claims pretty significantly. So if done well and thought through quite carefully, case management can have very positive effects on recovery and outcome. If done poorly, it can have very negative effects on recovery and outcome. And this is a quote from a qualitative study of a South Australian workers' compensation scheme, again, about 2000. My case manager didn't tell me anything or help me with the process. I knew nothing about travel claims, rehab, work training or physiotherapy. They just send out the same letters to everyone. Letters sent by case managers were threatening, the pressure was unnecessary, and I would have healed quicker without it. The boundaries of the return to work process need to be explained. The lack of information is very stressful. So this is obviously in someone who had a poor experience with their interaction with the compensation scheme. We've recently finished a review of these sorts of qualitative studies, in which we were able to find 14 high-quality qualitative studies of injured workers and their engagement with case managers and the compensation schemes. And we, at the end of that systematic review, which is about to be published in the Journal of Occupational Rehab, we describe what we called in some workers getting into this sort of cyclical and pathogenic interaction with the compensation scheme. And it starts really, or can start, where the relationships between the injured person and the claims manager primarily start to break down, where they start to become adversarial. And injured people report that influences their ability to get an accurate diagnosis, which may lead to difficulty getting treatment, which may lead to the injury becoming more chronic, which may lead to psychosocial consequences, mental health outcomes and those sorts of things, which may lead to legitimacy concerns on behalf of the system, questioning whether the case is legitimate, which may lead in again to the process becoming adversarial. And in a small proportion of cases, we can move into this sort of cyclical process, and it becomes very difficult to break out of. And these are the situations that I think you want to avoid or do something about in designing any sort of claims management or case management system. So in an insurance model, this is a quote just from someone who studied case management in an insurance model, and there aren't that many out there. This is from a study published in 2007. In the field of work injury rehabilitation, case management is a collaborative process which includes evaluating, planning, implementing, coordinating and monitoring the options and services required to meet injured workers' health and work-related service needs. So it sounds pretty complex. In the Australian injury compensation schemes, I think you need to add to that, while containing claims costs, managing relationships with multiple parties, often who have competing interests, navigating complex regulation and policy, and working within rigid organisational processes. So this is what we're asking case managers to be, I reckon, with thanks to Len Boehm, who I stole this from. You know, we're really expecting our case managers to be Superman or Wonder Woman and perform a really very difficult task in getting people back to work. So in summary, I think that case management is the critical interface between the injury compensation scheme and the injured person. If done well, it can lead to very positive outcomes. If done poorly, it can lead to very negative outcomes. It's a very difficult job. So as a researcher, that then begs the question, I think, so where is the evidence base for current practice in what we do in injury case management? And I've got to tell you, it's at least in the published research evidence, academic literature, it's pretty thin on the ground. Here's one, apart from the other studies I've shown you, here's one that I've found really useful on the Institute of Work and Health website. It was an ethnographic study of case managers in the Workplace Safety Insurance Board of Ontario scheme, where they actually watched people working. The ethnographic method is sort of one of the qualitative methods. They actually watched people at work and then reported on the findings of what those people were doing. But there's not a lot of research evidence. So the objective of this study really was just to begin to understand the impact on case managers of those complex interactions that they're having in compensation schemes, and to begin to develop an evidence base, or at least an understanding of what happens in injury case management in Australia. As part of, as I mentioned, of an ARC industry linkage project, which is a bigger project attempting to examine the impact of compensable injury on all of those parties involved in the recovery process, not just the injured person, claims managers and the compensation scheme being one of those, It has multiple components. We're in the third year of it now. We're doing these case studies of different systems. I'm just going to report to you the bit highlighted in red, which was some qualitative focus groups of compensation scheme personnel, so one part of a broader study. And the objective of the broader study is to begin to get a better understanding of the burden of injury. So if you look at the way in which we measure the burden of injury in society, it's entirely focused at the moment on our understanding of what happens to the injured person, what healthcare they require, how long it takes them to recover, did they get back to work, those sorts of things, which are very important things to ask ourselves. But we have very little understanding of what happens to other people involved in that person's recovery, their family members, their carers, their colleagues, and very little understanding of what their sort of economic and healthcare system impacts of injury are at a macro level, or what the impacts are in our world on compensation systems. And that's really what I'm going to talk to you about just over the next few minutes. So we ran three focus groups in three different jurisdictions. Two of them were workers' comp schemes. One of them was a motor vehicle accident compensation scheme. Two of those systems had in-house case management. One of them outsourced their case management to private insurers, so a mix of sort of approaches. They were all primarily no-fault systems. We interviewed 21 case managers in total, 8 of whom were male, 13 female. 13 of them were frontline staff. Their day job was to engage with injured people and their providers. And 8 of them were claims team leaders who, I think 7 of those 8 had been frontline staff in the past. And on average, they had about 5 years' experience in the role. It ranged quite a lot from 5 months to up to 20 years. So that's the group we were working with, three focus groups. And we asked them a really simple set of questions based on the World Health Organization ICF framework, International Classification of Functioning Disability and Health. And they were open-ended questions just designed to elicit that person, that case manager's experience in dealing with other people in the process. And here's an example of the sort of question we ask. So how does the injured person's access to services and support influence your interaction with that injured person? So the underlying premise there is that injured people have different sources of support and different access to things, and that has some influence on the case manager's interaction with them and their experience working with that person. So 5 of those sorts of very open-ended questions were asked. And what you do, if you're not familiar with sort of qualitative analysis, is you code that data. You have, at the end of the three focus groups, which I went for about 2 hours each, we had a huge amount of information, recorded information, which we coded, trying to identify themes based on a pretty broad search for different concepts that were emerging. And then we identify fragments of dialogue that illustrate each theme. And we had 2 raters doing this and tried to make sure we got good reliability between those 2 raters. And what you end up with, in a nutshell, is a series of themes emerging from those focus groups. And here are the themes. So extra role behaviour, frustration, emotional commitment, stress, defensiveness or anger, and then a summary one really which I'm attempting to wrap it all together, which is stuck in the middle. So rather than talking descriptively about those, I'm just going to illustrate them with some examples, some quotes from the focus groups to give you a sense of what they mean. So this is one that I've personally found really interesting and fascinating, and it came about from a number of ways. So case managers felt that they needed to go beyond what would be considered their normal duties in order to get a positive outcome from the injured person. And that might occur as a consequence of having a poorly motivated client, the case being really complex, or having the person having a poor social support. And this is a quote from a female participant in a motor vehicle compensation scheme. That's what that means. If they, that is the injured person, know that they could be entitled to a payout, could possibly hinder their recovery for rehab, not wanting to access services. It makes our job quite difficult trying to motivate them and get them moving, particularly if they've got people around them telling them, don't do anything because you might get a payout. So in this case, the participant was expressing the feeling that their role was really try to motivate the injured person to get back to work, and they thought that was a bit beyond what would be considered normal duties for a case management. Complexity was another issue that came through, really related to the complex nature of the compensation schemes and the multiple parties involved. And the more different people got involved, the more difficult it became to manage cases and to achieve the outcomes that were desired. So one of the complications, you can get those that have access to a range of different services or interactions with different people. And as a circle becomes wider and wider in terms of the number of services or people that a worker is interacting with, it becomes more difficult to have everyone on the same page in terms of the outcome that everyone's hoping to achieve with the worker, which should be return to work and return to independence. So apart from being a really long sentence, also giving a sense that as things become more complex, the cases become more difficult to manage and experienced as such by the case managers. So frustration was something that came through quite strongly. This is an example of frustration with a lack of information provision, particularly from healthcare providers, but other examples of frustration were about processes and procedures within the systems getting in the way of getting a good outcome, and also about lack of flexibility in role, so having to operate within a pretty narrowly defined role. This particular quote is about frustration and being dependent on healthcare providers. And in the end, you sort of go, OK, I'm at capacity with this. I don't know where else to go. I'm not getting the information. So you may make the choice to deny the claim until I get further information. It's quite frustrating because you think, gee, there's a person that may need something. Stress, another one. So quite closely related to the frustration issue, but I guess mirroring some of the themes already coming through, but a little bit different because a lot of the comments about stress were about the internal expectations of the management within the insurance agency or within the claims management organisation. And this is a good example of that. So when the injured person, don't go back to work, that puts a lot of pressure on the case manager because there's a certain expectation that if you've just got a broken ankle, you'll be back at work within 10 weeks. And then the pressure that you potentially could be putting on that case manager going, well, why aren't they back at work? So there was a lot of commentary about internal KPIs and internal expectations leading case managers to feel stressed when you're working with a pretty unpredictable set of outcomes. And this one, I think, which is really fascinating, was about emotional attachment and about case managers' ability to disengage themselves from the injured person and sometimes getting too close to the injured person and that affecting their decision-making. And this is something that has come through in a number of conversations I've had one-on-one with people who are at the front line. So I've seen case managers get through no fault of their own but have quite a close relationship with the injured workers, and sometimes it's difficult to remove yourself from that. So then the extent of whatever their condition or injury is can impact on them at a personal level because they've become quite involved with them, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end, it can impact on how you manage that claim. So being too close to the claim, A, can be a bit stressful and also can impact on your ability to manage the claim and make decisions. And finally, this one was particularly for the lawyers in the room, frustration and anger, particularly directed towards solicitors. And the feeling, I think, that the objectives of plaintiff lawyers, at least in these schemes, were fundamentally different to the objectives of other parties and particularly case managers working in the system. So I like this bottom one particularly because it illustrates the degree of anger, really. So I get really angry when I see them, really angry. Like, I get really fired up. I must articulate it a lot because now when my children are in the car, I turn the radio on and they say, oh, Mum, it's those, insert name of legal firm here, really. Okay, so really, when we tied all of this information together, the various information coming out of the focus groups, the overarching sense was that the case managers felt that they were in the middle of quite a complex system and that they were feeling pressure or stress or frustration directed towards multiple parties in the system that they engage with, that they were working in a very complex environment, and what they were attempting to do was balance the competing priorities of the various parties that they were engaging with. So an employer might be asking them to do something, but that may be in contrast to what the regulator or the injured person wanted them to do or what the healthcare provider's recommendations were, and that their job was to try to get all those people working towards a common goal, and that can be quite a complex thing. And so really they were sort of saying that if this is the case manager, they felt that they were sort of stuck in the middle and that there are all of these interactions and they were attempting to get everyone moving towards a common goal when often there were competing interests. So some potential solutions which are offered during the focus groups to this. So if that's the case, if that's how case managers are experiencing being involved in these systems, then what can we do about it? And something that was offered by a number of different people across a couple of our focus groups was face-to-face engagement. Where that happened, it was felt to be a really positive thing that allowed the case managers to get on the same page with the other parties that they were dealing with. There was a strong theme of greater education and training being required, and I guess a recognition that, at least among some of the people in our focus groups, that they didn't feel that they had the skills and capability to do the job that they were being asked to do. A couple of the focus groups felt that development and use of evidence-based guidelines for decision-making would help, as opposed to processes that don't aid decision-making. So guidelines that can actually help you make decisions rather than here is a process, follow it and figure out what the decision is yourself. And that those should be based in some sort of evidence or at least some sort of experience. This issue about internal relationships in claims management teams came up quite strongly, and some solutions to that were improving the relationships between the frontline case manager and the team leaders or the senior management in their organisation because of those sort of the sort of implied pressure, even if it's not stated, from senior management on the frontline caseworkers. And similarly, to sort of address that issue, some of the participants felt that one of the major sources of stress was the sort of overlay of performance metrics from some of the regulators in the system, and that they are linked directly to, in some cases, to the KPIs of that case manager. And that's another source of stress that for the case managers, another set of performance metrics that they need to meet. And not always it was felt aligned with a recognition of what the other parties in the system were trying to achieve. So a suggestion was made that those performance metrics be reviewed. So in summary, this is really a descriptive study. As I said, the beginnings of attempting to develop a bit of a research evidence base for what happens in case management in Australian injury compensation schemes. So the high-level summary is case managers play a critical role. I think we should think of it as an intervention, as something that if we do it well can have a really positive impact, if we do it poorly can have a really negative impact. There's currently no agreed best practice. There's currently no agreed common practice, I would argue, let alone best practice. There's very little research evidence in this field. If you type in the term case management into Google Scholar or something, you get a lot of articles, but they're often from disability case management or healthcare case management. Very little evidence in sort of insurance sector case management. And it's a different ballgame, I think, as soon as you have an insurance model in place. And this study really just illustrates some of the complexities of the role and some of its impacts on staff who are performing the role. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex. We've got plenty of time for questions. I will ask that if you do have a question, if you could come up to the microphone. I know it's a small audience, but if you could come up to the microphone and state your name and your organisation as the session is being recorded. And I will kick off and I will state my name, Andrew Smith from PwC. I have a question. One of the slides that you put up very early was just giving that impression that if this is done poorly, then there are some negative impacts. I didn't know whether that was an overseas case study or not, but if you were to rate how this is done in Australia, do you get a sense that Australia does pretty well in this, or is it more of an individual by individual challenge?
Is that the one you were mentioning, thinking about? That? Or this? This? Okay, anyway. I think there's just a huge variation in practice. So I think some schemes in Australia probably do it pretty well. And I've seen some of the ones that I've been working with as a researcher are proactively trying to address some of these issues like education and training. And they're investing a lot in their staff, their frontline staff. TAC is an example, doing a lot there in that space. I think in other areas it's pretty poor, either for reasons of for all sorts of reasons, I think. And I think there's probably, in this country, you know, we've got 20 different injury compensation schemes, if you add up the workers' comp and motor vehicle schemes, and a lot of those have private insurers doing the case management, so we've probably got 40 or 50 different approaches to this around Australia. I don't think it's possible to say whether we do it better or worse than other countries. I'm not aware of any sort of comparative studies that have looked at this. I just think it's an area where we have current practice, and the sorts of things that go on in case management are usually based on experience and the knowledge of people who work within the schemes over, you know, long careers in a lot of cases. But very little of that makes it out into the light of day and is shared between schemes or between insurers, where there's a profit motive for insurers, if they find something that works, to hold on to it. So I think one of the roles that researchers can play is to bring some of that current practice to light and start to develop an evidence base for what is at least current practice, and then hopefully what can be best practice. I just don't think it exists at the moment. So I may be being too harsh there, but that's my assessment of the situation. I'm not sure if anyone agrees or would like to disagree with me. But
Deb Jones and Brent Watson. This is more of an observation, as we work a lot with self-insurers, and typically a case manager that works for an employer that self-insures workers' comp might be a fairly experienced person who, perhaps if they were working for an insurer, might not be in a frontline case management role, but might be the next step up the line. And I think you can see where they have better fortune in terms of their employment than the case managers that you're looking at in your study. Some of those things are addressed in self-insurance context. They have more autonomy, and they also always have face-to-face contact with the injured person as the client. So I guess if you're able to look at self-insurers in comparison with insurers, it might be a fruitful area of what are the advantages, disadvantages. Is there anything that insurers can take away in terms of what they can offer their case managers to bring them more into that space where they've got a bit more autonomy and a bit more face-to-face contact with their client?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think we can learn a lot in the injury comp field, not just from self-insurers, and it is, I think you're right, a sort of a different operating model in self-insurance, not one that I've been closely involved with, I've got to say, but at a sort of high level I understand some of the differences that you mentioned. But also general insurance, you know, there are things that happen in home and contents insurance and other sort of similar roles, or other, even just other service industries, where we're getting people engaging with other people, with clients. We can probably learn a lot from those other fields as well. Not all of it's going to be applicable, but parts of it will be. And I know that some of the general insurers that also do injury claims management have quite rigorous sort of induction and training programs. Others don't. So there's probably a lot that can be learned from looking outside our own little sector. I'm not sure how much of that's gone on, but I've noticed a little bit of it over the last few years, of people starting to look a bit more broadly for ideas about how to do things well.
Hi, I'm Robin Healy from New South Wales, specifically. I enjoyed the presentation, and it's an area I'm particularly interested in case management. Having worked as a case manager, sort of, in both TTP and in workers' compensation, the point that I'm interested in is, I think, compensation systems have done a lot to try and bring people with skill into case management roles over the years. And what I found quite interesting is that when those people come into those systems, they're coming with great intentions, they're coming with great ideals, and they're decent kind of people. And so they start off and they're working in a particularly positive way and trying to get the person in the systems to get back to their, the pre-existing conditions. Over time, though, that tends to change, and I've been interested in why that happens. And most recently, I was involved in a system that was looking at this, like how you can actually change the way case managers operate so that they are actually assisting the person as much as they can. And I think one of the issues is the actual system that they're working in. So if you look at a system, for example, in New South Wales, which is workers' compensation, it's much more regulated, it's much more process-driven, there's much less opportunity for the case manager to actually do things differently. And so I suppose the concern I have is that case managers sort of, you know, look at it as partly the problem, rather than seeing that there are other things that are actually impacting on it. I think it's a good start to actually look at, you know, whether we can do things differently as a system to actually improve the way that happens. And one of the things that I think that actually can happen positively is if case managers have actually encouraged and regulators encourage insurers and other organisations to look at improving outcomes for the injured person, we might actually get a different approach in the way the case managers are working so that the drivers are improved health outcomes and improved return to work process.
Yeah, no, I thank you. It's an insightful comment, I think. And I guess a couple of things in response. One is, I've seen a couple of examples of private insurers trying different approaches to the skills mix, if you like, in claims management. So I'm not sure, Bronwyn, if you were involved in that NRMA trial in New South Wales a few years ago. I'm not sure if those results have been made public, but that was an interesting attempt, I think, to try to address the skills mix. And then one of the wonderful things about TAC moving to Geelong, in hindsight, and Bruce and Damien, correct me if I'm wrong, is that they lost half of their staff. These systems they develop sort of cultures over time. TAC had been going for about 22, 23 years and had developed a very strong insurance culture, I would describe as that. You know, I was employed by TAC at the time. And in moving to Geelong, about half of the staff chose not to go with them, so it was an opportunity to change the culture of the insurance operations of the TAC, and at the same time TAC put this health outcomes and independence outcomes sort of at the centre of what they were trying to achieve. And you can still see that flowing through the organisation now, I think, is that a bunch of new staff and a change in sort of mindset from the top down does actually have a different feel about it now when you walk into the TAC than it did 5 or 6 years ago when they were in Melbourne. You can almost feel it when you walk in the building. So I think you're absolutely right. I think it is a system level thing, and systems drive culture, and culture influences people's behaviour, and that is critical considering those sort of things if we're expecting case managers to operate differently, thinking about those things.
I'll ask another question, Alex, Andrew Smith. In my role as an advisor to a scheme, that interaction that I have with claims managers, case managers, is critical. Trying to bridge that gap between the interactions that the case manager will have with the injured person and the interpretation of the experience that we see coming out the other end. Do you have a view, or did the people in your focus group give you a sense of what those pivotal moments are in the case management journey?
Not so much moments, but things that make things more or less complex, yes. Yeah, they comment on those quite a lot. The things that came through most strongly about whether an individual claim, I'm not sure if this is addressing your question, but if an individual case was easy or more difficult, were things like the complexity of the injured person and their motivation to get back to work or to recover if it's not a workers' comp scheme, the degree of support they have in their community, so do they have family to look after them when they're not working, or are they living isolated by themselves, those sorts of things, and their relationship with their employer, if it's sort of a return to work issue. They were the things that came through strongly in these interviews, but that just replicates what we already know about things that help people recover and get back to work. So none of that was really surprising. And the purpose of this focus group wasn't really to ask them about that. It was actually just to say, well, how are you experiencing it as a case manager? What impact do those sort of things have on you, not on the injured person's recovery? I'm not sure if that answers your question, but that's probably the best I can do at the moment.
Yeah, that leads me to a second point, because we talk often about how important that early intervention and early interaction with the injured party is. On your frustration slide, you talked about a lack of information. And
yeah.
I was curious to know why that was and what we might be able to do about that.
I think there's probably a whole bunch of reasons. This one. So, look, in this case, it was just... I think the example was that they needed some information from a healthcare provider to make a decision about whether other certain benefits should be paid or not, and they weren't getting it from the healthcare provider, so the fallback position is just to deny that aspect of the claim. Because it's pretty hard to make a decision in a vacuum of information, I think. So I think there's all sorts of reasons why case managers feel they don't have the right information. We know that providers in a lot of cases are unwilling to work with compensation schemes, or less willing than they would otherwise be in a non-compensable environment, at least in some cases, for all sorts of reasons. You know, it depends where the information is coming from, I suppose. There's probably a legal overlay in a small proportion of cases, and the lawyers having an influence on the sorts of information that the injured person gets through to the compensation scheme. There's all sorts of reasons why information does or doesn't come through. And all of those things, one of the complexities of the case management is you have to sift your way through that, figure out what you're getting and what you're not getting, and make a reasonable decision about what benefits to provide. And that's not an easy thing to do, I think. So I do think we're asking them to be Superman. Not sure where that is. There you go. I do think we're asking them to do an incredibly complex job, because the system itself that they're operating in is, and I would say this of almost every injury compensation scheme, is dysfunctional, at least to some extent. They're not getting the information through in a lot of cases that they require to make timely decisions. And early intervention is a good example. In Victoria, employer has 10 days to... Sorry, it's a 10-day access period, so you can't make a claim until you're off work for 10 days, and then the employer has 10 days to lodge the claim. So by the time it gets to a case manager's desk, it's at least 4 weeks down the track in most cases. So there goes your opportunity for early intervention, I would argue. If it's a minor musculoskeletal condition and you're not getting to it within 4 weeks, then you know, it's too late already. So there's all those sort of systemic issues that make this a hard job.
From WorkSafe, just to pick up your point there about frustration with information, that's one area that we're looking at WorkSafe at the moment, and a lot of red tape and frustration that both from the injured worker's point of view, they can't get the services they want in a timely manner, and from the case manager's point of view. And a lot of that is often driven by legislation, but we're now trying to have a look at where it's reasonable to cut that red tape. So one example is that we have a requirement in our Act that there has to be a referral for an IME report. But really, when you think about it, an IME is not going to write a report if he hasn't been asked to do it. So that sort of seems like a silly requirement that we have. There is probably a turning point that we are at the moment, where we're looking at where does it make sense to streamline, what can we take out that is really just red tape, hopefully we'll help both case managers and injured workers.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm sure most of the schemes around the country are looking at these sorts of issues, and some of them more proactively than others. So, you know, we did a little bit of research for WorkSafe, just looking at the processes they use to communicate with injured workers and with employers. And part of that research was A, understanding what WorkSafe Victoria does, but then we interviewed, we had a questionnaire, an online questionnaire for about 14 or 15 other injury compensation schemes around the world to ask them about how they engaged with injured people. And the common approach was just to send a letter. Full of technical legal language, or at least on that spectrum, technical language. And in some schemes internationally, there was a move more towards telephone contact, and a couple of them had even gone to sort of move into the 21st century and start using internet technology and those sorts of things to engage with people. But there wasn't, again, there was a pretty wide variety, but I think those sorts of things is how you communicate with injured people can influence then the role that case managers have. If there's a clear set of expectations and understanding of what is being attempted to achieve, then it makes the case manager's role a bit easier. So that's just an example of red tape, I think, is how do we even communicate with people. It's quite complex at the moment in a lot of systems. So.
Well, thanks, Alex. We're out of time. We're off to lunch now. I believe lunch is served just out the front. But before we go, will you join me in thanking Alex for his presentation?